Good morning and welcome to the Monday, March 9th edition of Byers & Company. We've got a couple of expert guests in the studios. Talk about coronavirus. Yeah, that's it. And we'll have the Heinkel's countdown to opening day. Stay tuned.
Byers & Company, WSOY, 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Good morning and welcome. You know, you got this weird dichotomy in your life. You know, I'm out at the airport on Friday. There's probably a couple hundred people there for the United SkyWest thing. They took a flight up to Chicago. What did everybody do? They got an airplane, breathed each other's air, flew to Chicago where they're canceling shows, and then flew back. And then everybody was out there. I can't not do this handshake thing, although I'm trying, but it's instinct to sort of do it. And this elbow bump just feels completely ridiculous. I see adult people doing this stuff, and I'm thinking, what are you doing? You're breathing the same air. And yet no one seemed to be worried about that, right? And then Mark was telling us you got the Big Ten tournament going on in Indianapolis starting this week. And there are some college tournaments that are not allowing fans in. I mean, you see this. I mean, how are we living in a world where everything is just so diametrically opposed to how people are reacting to this whole coronavirus? If you missed Bart Jennings earlier in the show, you need to listen to that, because he's down in Atlanta with like 40,000 people in the supply chain management. This is impacting the supply chain side of things. 94% of the Fortune 1,000, not Fortune 50, 250, 1,000. So later this summer in July, when you click on Amazon and they say, sorry, that's going to be 30 days instead of delivering it tomorrow, it's going to have real life ramifications for you. But what I want to talk about this segment is, what are the real health dangers, right? I see these people in masks. And by the way, they're buying so many of these masks that actual medical side of things can't get masks where they need them. Which is crazy. I don't know who to believe, what to believe. President comes out and says, don't panic. Then everybody jumps on him. Well, the Democrats jump on him. It's like, oh, you're not doing enough. They've politicized this thing. Like, that's what we need, like another hole in our head, is for them to be, you know, doing this in a presidential election year. So we asked, and we're going to have people on all week. We got the health department coming in. We got DMH coming in. Today's Crossing and Tanya Andrick. And good morning. I was happy to see you guys at least having this round table at your place with Congressman Davis. Now, not that I think Rodney has the answers, because I'm generally, like, in this type of thing, don't want to hear from any of the politicians. But a lot of money has been freed up by the federal government. What does that mean here locally?
I think that means locally that in the event that our community faces an increase in or cases of COVID-19, that we will have access to resources and dollars to ramp up a community-wide response.
Okay, and I was glad to see you guys just communicating, because that's always my fears. I never believe in, like, the cover-ups or the conspiracies. I see inept most times, you know, like just human mistakes. So you guys are talking on a regular basis.
Absolutely, and I think that that's what this community needs to understand first and foremost. Macon County has excellent health care. We have two solid hospitals that are connected to larger health systems, which give them access to resources. We have a health department. We have the federally qualified health center. That's Crossing. And everyone is talking. Everyone's paying close attention. And we will be ready if we need to be. And we will,
okay,
respond.
As I understand this, from the national level to the state level, most of this is being handled through the Illinois Public Health Department.
That is correct.
And then that goes down to our Macon County Health Department.
Correct.
And then out to you guys?
Yes, most of the hospitals, and certainly us, get the information directly from CDC and IDPH. And so we are all on email alerts. We get all of that information directly from the feds. So we don't have to wait for that information to get sourced down through, but it is all the same information. If we see something in our community that we need to report, our reporting structure would be up through our Macon County Health Department, and then it would then go up through to the state and then to the federal government. So that's how that works.
All right. Well, the communication is one thing, and that's important.
Absolutely.
And then I think communicating to the media to get out to the larger masses, sure, because there's so much conflicting. I think the media is overhyping things, but it's hard to say they're the only ones when you've got places like McCormick Place shutting down conventions, you know, 65,000 people, yet everybody demanding tickets to go see the Big Ten tournament. There's so many mixed messages going on.
Correct. And I think that individuals are going to have to make right choices for themselves. And I think Dr. Serba can talk a lot about how you make those right choices choices for yourself.
But don't you feel like some of these choices are not being made on a medical basis? They're being made out of a PR basis.
Or fear.
I mean, I think like South by Southwest just canceled for the first time in 33 years. Now, this isn't a music festival bringing a bunch of people in their 70s and 80s to this thing. It would seem to be the wrong demographic, right? I mean, but why are they canceling things like this?
I mean, I think it's fear of the unknown. I think there's a little aspect also of liability. I mean, who wants to be the location where this, quote, blows up?
Yeah, but it is going to blow up, right?
It is going to blow up.
Why are we even using the word containment? Once it's out and it's here, it's not contained, right?
Right, and travel history is going to be irrelevant here very soon.
Well, travel history, from what I understand, that our first round of testing was really kind of blown because they didn't realize that people had been walking around for weeks and weeks with this. So the testing sample itself, and there's only been like, what, 1,500? I mean, it's crazy. We don't really know. But we can assume, just doing the math of where it is everywhere else, that it's going to get bigger before it gets smaller.
Absolutely.
All right. So the disease or the virus itself, it doesn't seem overall, from a demographic point of view, it seems far less dangerous than influenza or the regular flu.
For most populations, that's correct. But just like influenza, this is a respiratory virus. And if you are a person perhaps over age 50, particularly over age 60 or 65, and you have any underlying health conditions, it could be potentially dangerous for you, just like influenza, just like any other respiratory virus.
So if you're looking at tackling this from a medical point of view, there's really not a big difference in your eyes between this and influenza if you're of a certain age bracket and you have underlying health issues.
Correct. I mean, it has potentially been shown to be a little bit more virulent than some strains of influenza. But again, a lot of our information is based on what's come out of China,
which is shaky at best. Potentially
suspect. So I think, you know, there's going to be more information available for us, the more cases we have in the United States, and we get a feel for it ourselves.
But is there also, with more cases, the boogeyman factor sort of goes away a little bit? I mean, I know that sounds strange, but it's like now we're just reading about some cruise ship, and it's all very sort of scary. Mm-hmm. But when you see it up close, and it is just kind of like the flu, do people get a little better understanding of the situation?
I think that will happen. I think that as we see this spread across our country, and we, again, like Dr. Serbus said, get firsthand knowledge of this, I think fears will decrease, and I think that people's, you know, irrational fears will decrease. Certainly, if you are older, if you have underlying health conditions, you should be wary. You should make sure that you're protecting
your
health.
Dr. Serbus, what kind of underlying health issues would you be kind of describing?
Well, any person with a chronic medical condition. So we're talking diabetes. We're talking heart disease. Any neurological condition that can affect your ability to breathe.
Anything that impacts your immunity.
Immunity, yeah. Exactly.
And of a certain age group.
And of a certain age group.
Particularly 65 plus is what it looks like if you can look at what's happened in the world. It doesn't look like kids, you know, are impacted at all.
No, actually, again, this is based on information out of China, which is perhaps not completely clear, but it shows that the pediatric population, for the most part, has been minimally affected. Kids are getting COVID-19, but they're experiencing what one would normally call just, you know, a cold.
We're seeing this out of Italy and some other places as well as these cases grow. Now, what you don't think about, though, Tanya, is the danger. I mean, everybody says work from home. Well, not everyone can work from home. And this is the time of year where people get sniffles and head colds and the flu. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if our economy stops, much more dangerous to the mass people's health than this thing itself, right?
Absolutely. You know, damaging our economy just damages the health system's ability to tackle this. You know, we're sort of in a downward negative spiral if everyone sort of freaks out and stays home and we have, you know,
our people are punching each other out over toilet paper in the aisles of grocery stores, right? I mean, this all impacts health.
Absolutely. And so people just need to use common sense. We've preached it. Wash your hands. Mm-hmm. Stay home if you're sick. Take care of yourself. If you're really concerned about your health, now's a good time to have a conversation with your doctor about how to improve your underlying health so that you'll be less susceptible to this the flu or any other illness.
And what about testing? I mean, a lot of noise has been made about testing, and clearly there's not going to be enough kits to test everyone. When should you even consider something like that?
I mean, I think this is one situation where common sense should prevail. If you are sick, if you have fever, if you have a cough, please stay home. If you have what one would consider routine cold symptoms, please stay home. Don't rush the emergency departments for testing for coronavirus. If you have underlying health conditions or you have any difficulty breathing, shortness of breath, any distress symptoms, then please present to your nearest emergency department. And those patients are the ones that would be preferentially selected for treatment. Not treatment, but testing.
Yeah.
That's where it makes a difference, is in the patient that has the potential to be hospitalized.
And I read a story over the weekend where they're suggesting that by the end of March that every hospital bed in America could be full. I mean, is that just crazy speculation? Or are there enough senior citizens who have these underlying medical conditions that this could be, that's when this thing turns into a game changer for that particular population, and it does have gigantic numbers?
I think that that's where watching what happens, as we saw this hit a nursing facility, an extended care facility in Seattle, in the Seattle area, what percentage of those residents who were all exposed start to see significant symptoms. And we're just watching that. You know, that's just been playing out over the last 7 days. And so I think that we will know that based on what we're seeing there. Dr. Serba, would you suggest anything else?
No, I think, I mean, there's all sorts of conjecture, but really until we see how this is going to affect the landscape here in this country, that's going to be the proof.
Unfortunately, though, there seems to be sort of conflicting messages, whether you're talking about the World Health Organization or you're talking about the CDC or you talk, and then the politics gets into all of this, which, you know, just don't listen to anybody in an elected office. You're probably better off. I know, apologize to the congressman. He was there hosting your event on Friday. But I want to listen to a doctor. I mean, tell me what the odds are. Tell me that this is not necessarily any more dangerous than influenza or the flu if you're fairly healthy and of a certain age. Tell me when I should probably stay home versus when I should work. I mean, this idea of elbow bumping, I mean, or being in crowds.
Right. I mean, some of this is common sense infection control. You know, wash your hands. Wash your hands a lot.
Yeah.
Try not to have unnecessary contact with people that you don't have to have contact with. I think it's also important to realize that influenza is still circulating.
But this would be your exact same advice across any of these.
Because the prevention for coronavirus is the same as the prevention for any of these other respiratory viruses. And you could be doing everybody a favor if you could prevent yourself from getting influenza or a routine upper respiratory viral infection, otherwise known as a cold, because then you're going to remove that confusion, you know, that, you know, do I have influenza? Do I have coronavirus? Well, you know, let's take the common sense measures to try to prevent everything. Wash your hands, cover your cough. Don't go out if you're feeling ill or you have a fever. Don't send your kids to school if they have a fever. Those are all routine, good, common sense measures that we really should practice all the time.
Do you have speculation as to why this just feels different, even though everything you just said, I believe 1,000%, why the perfect storm of sort of the cancellations, Italy shut down like 25% of their country. You don't think of the Italians as being sort of like panicky about this kind of thing. In fact, we're kind of more so here in America, I think, than they are in Europe. Why is all of this so different? I mean, I got an email from my CEO. I've been through every single thing that's going to kill us, from mad cow disease to H1N1. I've never gotten an email from our CEO telling us, you know, all of these things.
Well, I think this outbreak has a very specific start point. Yeah. You know, the Wuhan province of China. We know when it started, almost to the day. So, I mean, I think there's been a targeted surveillance from that point on. And I think it's just kind of waiting for the wave to hit. So I think that's where that's coming from. I think the media is playing a piece of this.
There's no doubt. I mean,
cable
news is just 24/7 on this.
Now, on the flip side, I can say that to compare the information that as a healthcare provider I'm getting today versus the information I received in 2009 with H1N1, it is a completely different story. You know, I feel like the CDC is really on top of things as far as information dissemination. I mean, things are changing by the day. Sometimes by the hour, we're getting updates by email blasts. So I feel like from an information perspective, it is much more out there. And that may be also sort of contributing to this, the pervasiveness of the concern.
It helps feed the beast.
I will tell you, I've been nothing but impressed with how the CDC has handled this.
Absolutely.
Excellent information dissemination, very factual. You know, it's from a healthcare standpoint, our government is handling this correctly and getting appropriate information out to healthcare providers.
I'm reading in the Wall Street Journal this morning about air traffic controllers and food inspectors mm-hmm. and mail carriers and, you know, where they're prepping, you know, essential services as this thing spreads. What does it look like? We're going to get a case in Macon County. I mean, it's not a question of if. I mean, it's just when.
Correct.
What does then that look like?
Well, I think that looks like, depending on the level of severity of the illness, the patient would be hospitalized at one of the hospitals. The hospitals are well prepared to handle it. They have special rooms with special ventilation that we use for people with tuberculosis. And so they will place that patient there and provide good supportive care because that's really all you can provide is supportive care.
But that works for one patient or a handful of patients. What if there's 50? What if there's 100? What if there's 500? Then you start to strain the entire system.
You're absolutely correct. And the hospitals are thinking that through. They're thinking through how they would manage that from a physical plant standpoint on how they would handle the ventilation systems in the various wings of their buildings. And they're also thinking that through from a staffing standpoint.
Right.
And so, you know, both of the hospitals are, you know, well led. They're smart people working on this, and we will just deal with the problems as they come,
but
and that's
all
we can do.
But my fear is the system can get overwhelmed.
Sure,
whether
can.
Or not it is overhyped or not, whether
Correct.
Or not the regular flu kills more people.
Correct.
At the end of the day, I'm more concerned with structure questions
right.
than I am the virus
and
itself, because every single person from the airlines are talking about like that airlines look like 9/11 airline
sure.
flight, tourism. I worry about the hot dog vendor at mm-hmm. South by Southwest. I mean, all
sure.
of the down spiral implications
right.
of what this does to the economy. People saying work at home, that works for some people. Yeah,
yeah.
If I work for Facebook, I can probably do that. If I got to go build stuff,
it doesn't work.
I can't do that. I mean, you got all construction going on your campus
Correct.
Right now. And then the irrational fear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and as human beings, we do this. I get
we
in my
do.
Car every day and I don't think about it, even though probably my odds are of hurting myself in that vehicle probably much worse than mm-hmm. most of the things that are on our nightmare list. But that's just what we do.
We do. I think that here locally, if the local health system does get taxed, and it's very possible that that would happen, we're benefited by the fact that both hospitals are tied to larger health systems. We're benefited by the fact that the leaders of those health systems have spent a lot of time here in Decatur. Both Ed Curtis and E.J. Kuiper have spent time here and know the local hospitals, so resources will come here. That's positive. And then health organizations like Crossing Healthcare, who have things like lab and x-ray and the ability to really step up our level of care, will rise up and likely take care of higher level of acuity patients on an outpatient basis if the inpatient hospitals are taxed. Those kinds of conversations are happening, and that's exactly how we would locally handle it. And the taxing would probably last 4 to 6 weeks because that's what we're seeing in other organizations. And so I think that, yes, it's possible. Will it be a good way to test the capability of our local health system? Absolutely, and we'll learn from it.
Lindsay was shopping yesterday, and she sent me a picture of, you know, where the hand sanitizer and soaps, empty shelves, and she did find it elsewhere in the store, but they were putting a limit to how many people could buy.
Yes.
Now, that's with nothing here.
Yes.
You know, what happens when it gets here, you know, and you've got people fighting in the aisles
right.
over bottled water or whatever it might be. This seems silly, but I can see it happening because I understand how human nature works.
Right. And just look what happens when we get a snow forecast.
Yeah.
You know,
everyone
runs to Walmart. And so, yes, I do think we'll see it. And I just hope that cooler heads, wise thought processes prevail.
So you were there Friday. Did you get a sense that the community from the mayor on down, I mean, you know, that people were, you know, on the same page and
Absolutely.
Pulling in the same direction?
Absolutely. And everybody, you know, has the same goal, and everyone is putting any differences aside to completely work together to address this. You know, it was discussed all the way from, you know, some patient management to supply chain issues, mask availability. you know, all of
the mask thing. You're a doctor.
Yes.
I have read and heard over and over that the mask isn't doing anything for you if you're not sick.
That's correct.
The only time you should wear a mask is to keep yourself from spreading germs other people.
To contain your droplets,
yeah.
So to speak.
Yes.
So yeah, if you are ill, then you should be asked and you should comply and put on a mask.
But if
you
are not ill,
it does not do anything to prevent or to save you from any exposure. And really, it's unfortunately wasting the resources that we have. So, you know, if you are ill, please use the protection. But if not, please let it be.
All right. The governor said on Friday that the risk to the public remains low. Do you concur with that?
I agree at this time.
Yeah.
There's, you know, and I want to encourage people. Yes, the hand sanitizer is out there. But good old-fashioned soap and water with some friction for 30 seconds is the best way to wash your hands.
Absolutely.
And so hand sanitizer would be your second choice. And, you know, I know it's convenient, but getting in the bathroom and scrubbing your hands with some soap.
Has the hand sanitizer done more damage over the years than it's helped, right?
Yes.
People think that it's the same as washing your hands, and it is absolutely not.
No. So if you have access to a sink, please do not use your hand sanitizer, and please wash your hands appropriately with soap and water for 20 to 30 seconds, which is a very long time. So time yourself. Take a minute, or 20 seconds to see how long that takes. If you are in a situation where you absolutely do not have access to soap and running water, then I guess hand sanitizer is a second best option, but should never replace primary prevention, which is, you know, good old fashioned hand washing.
And I encourage people to actually read their hand sanitizer. It will tell you on there how long you have to leave your hands drenched in the hand sanitizer for it to actually work. And so this is, again, something people don't understand. They spray it in their hands, they rub it around, and they think they're good. It requires a number of seconds with completely coated wet hands with the sanitizer for it to actually kill the germs it says on the front of the hand sanitizer that it does. So read your bottles, understand what you're doing, but use soap and water when you can.
This is how stupid we are, because we just get placebos gimmicked to us all the time, and that sort of takes care of like our worry process in your mind. It doesn't do anything.
Nope.
I feel like there's only so much you can control in life, you know, and getting this and then surviving this or not getting it. Really, I mean, you're not going to be able, wearing a mask isn't going to keep you from getting it or not getting it. And I don't know why we have an irrational fear, but I think there is something about sort of the stampede mentality, and the media is certainly barreling forward with that. Our politicians are doing this, these cancellations, all that plays into it. But if I told you 26,000 people have died since January from influenza, which is just dwarfs the number of people that have died in this country by
One freaks out.
Yeah. I don't get
exactly.
it.
I know.
And there is a vaccine for influenza.
Well, yeah, right.
And no one gets it.
Exactly.
I've never had a flu shot in my life.
Right? I get mine every year.
Guys, we really appreciate you coming in. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Dr. Serba and Tanya Andrew from Crossing Healthcare, we appreciate your expertise.
All right.
Thank you.